Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bench with Bubba, episode 525. Got a returning guest to the show to talk about some early draft season, gladiators, draft champions. Look back at 2022, because as we've heard on other shows, it's always worth learning from what we did good and bad from the previous season and see where it takes us going forward. When we got some time at the end, some early 2023 draft champions ADP debates, because why not? It's all the fun, all the rave these days. But before we get into that, you can check him out on Twitter at Pile of Dial, and he's a part of the In the Cut Fantasy Podcast with Ryan Venancio. John Fish, my buddy Fish, how we doing, my man?
Good, Bubba. I'm a little bit under the weather, but I'm still happy to make it on with you, and looking forward to talking some baseball today.
I appreciate it. We're going to talk, like I mentioned, I don't know if you want the secret out there, but I'm going to kind of throw it out there. Everybody, John told me he's doing less drafts this year. So we gotta watch this. And he's probably mentioned it elsewhere, but that was a shocker to me. And I'm gonna watch this from a distance. Let's put it that way. Because I honestly don't think you can do many more drafts. There's only one person out there that can do more, and he will. So Waxman will do them. So the bar is lower in that respect. But let's just kind of go there. We'll kind of jump around the 2022-2023 pivot points here. What's making you finally decide, maybe I should come back a little bit?
I'm getting rid of a lot of leagues that, I did four or five NFBC 50s last year, and they're like 12 team draft and hold. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing any of those this year. I'm obviously doing gladiators. I'm doing gladiators. I've already done seven. I think that might be it, though. I mean, it's pretty much almost done, all wrapped up anyways. But, I'm only to do, well, I'm actually trying to decide if I'm going to do a main event or not. I got in the summer, one of those Friday night, I split, those win a free main event entry. Well, I split that with Jay Kalisker. And so I didn't win a full free main event, but I won a half. But you don't have to put it towards a main event. You can put it towards anything as long as it's $1,000 or above league. So, I got 875 or whatever it is off. So, I'm trying to decide if I'm going to use that with $1,000 DC or a main event, or if I'm going to jump up to a super or one of the $2,500 DCs. I haven't quite decided yet. The big thing for me is I'm trying to eliminate a lot of fab leagues. I've already told Dave McDonald I'm not going to do Glarf this year. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to do TGFBI this year. And no offense, that it's a good competition. It's just I'm getting rid of all the fab leagues. I don't like the fact that my Sundays are just filled with that kind of stuff. So I'll probably still do the tag team league. I do enjoy doing that, so I'll still do that. That's a fab league. But and as far as DCs are concerned, I'm just with gladiators. I've kind of taken a little bit of a step back with DCs. I still love DCs. It's my favorite format, but I did like 30 last year. I might cut back to like 15 or something like that. I don't know. I haven't really decided. I'm kind of just going with the flow. I'm not sure how many 400s I'm going to do. I did six of those last year. I actually performed the best in those, so maybe I should continue to do those. But I don't know. I'm just going to see where things go. I want to, as you can see, if anybody's watching live here, you can see behind me, my basement is not finished in my house. Yeah. So I want to actually save some money to try to, you know, because you're not guaranteed to win money, obviously, when you enter fantasy leagues. So I want to try to save some money and get this all finished down here. And then I'll back up my volume again for next year.
Good man right there. You hit a couple things I figured as much. The Fab thing is a real statement for many of us starting to reconsider life, basically. Like, when you have kids, you want to redo your basement. There's a million things going on. Like, the Fab leagues, if you want to be successful in them, you got to have the time. If you, like, if you just miss a little bit, it somehow comes to bite you every single time. So 100% with you there. And the one thing I noticed, are you just pretty much non-12 team leagues anymore? Just pretty much 15s? By what you said there in your conversation points, because you don't do OCs, you're dropping the 50s. Also, so you're 15 team through and through now?
Yeah, that's another thing. Bouncing back and forth between 12s and 15s is just not for me. It just kind of gets me all messed up. I like to just stay with my one format. It's kind of why I've dropped other formats as well. Like, I don't really do any best balls. I don't do any cut lines. And, yeah, the OC used to be my favorite, you know, event, because, you know, the 12s, you know, when you first kind of get started with fantasy, it's easier to do the 12s because it's just more players, you know, like, that you're rostering, whereas 15s, the rosters are so deep and the way they're, you know, the waiver wire is so bare. Once you get more experience, it's a little bit, for me anyways, easier to do the 15s because I'm kind of, you know, just more advanced, I guess, in general with player knowledge and stuff like that. So yeah, I don't think I'm going to do any OCs. There's no plans to. Another thing is, if you're doing one OC, you know, such a large portion of your entry goes towards the overall. So if you're only doing one, I mean, you're competing against tons of other players that are doing tons of entries. So it's like, you know, the odds really aren't in your favor. So that's another reason I'm considering maybe not doing a main, because I'm only going to do one main. That kind of doesn't really make a ton of sense. That's why I'm thinking about maybe just doing a super or something like that.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm torn on right now, because I love the OC. It's fun, but I don't think my brain is quite set on overalls yet, because it's a different mindset. And you know what I'm talking about. I'm going to have Guilds on next week, rescheduled from earlier. That was my bad. We're going to go over a lot of that stuff, because he just continually crushes overall competitions. That's just what he does. But I was in the league that he won DOC last year, and I watched him draft, and it was just like a piece of art. And he knows what he's doing in that format. So my mindset is, if I'm only going to do like 3 or 4 OCs, why don't I do like maybe a handful of like satellites, just build a bankroll and keep learning the formats of this, that, or like you said, you're doing a super, maybe I do like something else. I don't know. But I like my 12 teams compared to 15s, but each their own. Like, you've given good reasons. Toby loves his 15s for the same reasons, basically. And it's kind of, you find your niche and enjoy it. But I'm starting to debate that same thing about the overall competitions. It's the overall prize pool, of course, looks amazing. There's no doubting that. But it's literally like winning the lottery. You got to run as pure can be. It's crazy. Like, I can't remember who it was in the main. Didn't Weimer finish ahead of Bob, and Bob still won the overall or something like that? Like, that's how crazy that kind of stuff is.
Yeah, that's I mean, I don't even know how that's possible, but yeah, that definitely did happen.
Yeah, I was lost, trust me. Yeah, so again, we talked before the show, we're not the stats guys, so that's not us. But let's talk a little more about 2022. You're a successful player. I don't know exactly how your season went last year. I'm guessing it didn't go too bad. You still have boxes in the back, so you are remodeling, so that's pretty good. Any strong takeaways, though, more so not just how you finish per se, but, you know, everyone talks about the balls. I don't even worry about the balls, because we never know now. It's proven fact. We have zero clue what, when, or what. So trying to figure that out is just silly to me. But just like, you know, the changing landscapes we continue to see, you know, the IL spots, guys moving up and down. We didn't have the expanded rosters per se. Or was there anything that kind of stood out to you to be different that you might take into 2023 draft season?
Not really so much on that front, but more so just like my draft strategy. Last year I kind of implemented my strategy that worked the year before, and like looking at the ADP board and how things are falling, I felt like this, the strategy that worked for me in 2021, the teams that I did well in, I took that strategy into last year, and I had a good season. It was, you know, it wasn't like super elite or anything. It was a profit. It was a small profit, but, it was the aces and bases strategy. You know, I love to get my stolen bases early. I love to get my aces early. And then I just let the rest of the draft kind of come to me. And that worked really well. And that's you know, that's kind of the thing I took into 2022. Now, looking at 2023, it's a little bit different because the starting pitchers, there's so many good starting pitchers in rounds like 6 through 10. It doesn't really make sense to go with that strategy, at least for me, from what I'm seeing right now. Now, everything, obviously, a lot of pitching gets pushed up when you get closer to March. So what I'm seeing right now, especially in Draft Champions, is I can still get your bases early, but then grab a closer. That's what I've been doing. And then kind of waiting a little bit and getting a lot of starting pitchers in the, it's, you know, starting like the fourth and fifth round.
Yeah, it is crazy watching. And I didn't realize it as much as I, you know, should have probably. I was with Mason Collette on Sleeper on the Bus like 2 weeks ago. And one of the topics was zero starting pitchers in the first round of a DC in the ADP. And I'm like, holy crap. Cause you know how it is. And you just mentioned it, like, especially come main event season, that'd be 3 to 5. Like, usually gets pushed up in there, usually. Maybe not this year, though, because of the depth you mentioned. And that is what's pretty crazy is you still have those elite, like, few guys, but there's such a pull behind it where you can make cases for each and every, like, one of those guys to take that step into that top five or something. And that's what makes it a little more, you know, go get those aces or go get the bases, go get the power, go load up on outfield, go load up on third base, like, go to these things that hit some scarcity positions potentially, and then get your pitching later. Like you mentioned, go get a closer, because right now, especially, we only know, like, what, 6-7 teams that are pretty much locked in for now with a closer, maybe a few more after some recent moves, but no more than 10. I'll be confident in saying that. So go get one of those or two of those guys, and then you're sitting pretty in those formats. That is definitely an approach to do. And it also kind of gives kudos to how we always talk about sometimes, you know, drafting early. Well, right now you're drafting early. You're loading up on bats and getting pitching later, but you're also learning the player pool. So when the ADP start to shift and you're still drafting, now you can, like, really know how to navigate things. Not saying it's always going to work out that way because drafts are – silly, but it's going to give you a head start for sure if you can pull it off. Speaking of these early drafts, we're going to hop around here. Let's do this gladiator talk here because we talked DCs. I want to talk some more ADP with you in a minute, but I think we need to hit gladiator first to kind of get to the point of how different the world is in these two things. Some of the similarities is pitching, starting pitching does drop in that too. So that's very true. There's reasons for that, obviously, as we will get to, but these gladiator drafts, for those that have not seen them somehow, they are 15 teams, 23-person rosters. You literally fill out your starting roster and you walk away. That's all you got. And then it's literally gladiator. Survival of the fittest is what's going to come down to. And run hot. I started to think about that, Fish. I'll let you. I have to let you talk. You are the guest. What's your thoughts on kind of the strategy? I've had some listeners ask, do you think it's like 7 starters, 2 relievers, 6 and 3? Is it heavy hitting early? What do you think is going to be? Because obviously you have to run good in health, but to me, I think everyone's going to have a stretch of injuries somewhere along the way. Like, it's going to be impossible, I think, to run perfect. So I guess it's to run the most perfect, but it's going to be interesting. Like, it's not just avoiding injuries. Everyone's going to get injuries. It's a long season. So how are you kind of going about this? Because we drafted one the other day, and I DM'd you after the first 2 rounds where I'm like, yeah, we have the same philosophy in this, at least early on. So what do you got?
Yeah, for me, it's 7 and 2 still. Just because, but okay, so like my strategy with the gladiators has been to get, you know, 2 pretty safe closers and then go with 7 starters. Cause like you said, you kind of need to run pure. Like, and again, everybody's going to have injuries, but I think the best, highest ceiling outcome, I guess, from your pitching staff is 7 and 2, getting 2 closers that each get 30 plus saves and get 7 starters so that your strikeout totals are, you know, elite enough. Now the problem is your 6 and 7 starters, where do you get them? You know, and those can also torpedo your team, you know, because if it's, let's say, an Eduardo Rodriguez or like a Mitch Keller, or like those guys that just have terrible, you know, whip and stuff like that, like they could torpedo your ratios. So, I understand why a lot of people are taking these, you know, elite middle relievers towards the end, but to me, that just limits your upside a little bit. But I guess I understand it. And this is the first year of the gladiator. Yep. So it'll be interesting. I can't wait to see at the end of the season who actually comes out on top and what their strategy was, and not just team that wins it. Like, I want to see the top 10 teams, like, cause I'll bet you there's all different strategies. In
100%. There. Yeah. And that's what I love about it. And I sort of like, you know, there's the guys like Phil and them, they're going to max it out and they're trying every strategy under the sun where, you know, you said you've done what, you think you said 7 so far?
Yeah.
And I've done 2. I have, for those listening, here's a listener special for you. I sent out a few DMs. Fish, I was going to tell on the show here if he wants to. He sounds like he might be done with gladiators. But East Coast people were getting mags. They kept doing the West Coast feeds for the Gladiator. So December 26th, the Monday after Christmas, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, Derek should be putting it in the lobby because it's available now for people that ask me. It should be in the lobby on Tuesday to sign up for. I think we have about five people in it already. So if you like to draft, it'll be a live stream that will be a Gladiator for you East Coast people. That won't be too late for you to miss on. So there you go. But yeah, I think it'll be interesting because I've done two. That'll be my third. And I've kind of done the same strategy. Well, no, I didn't. I did two different. I still got the third baseman slash give me a closers early. I'm with you on the two closers things because we'll get the scarcity in a minute, but third base is one that gets ugly quick. So I'm with you on the two closers. And then I was almost making a point to wait on starting pitching as long as I felt comfortable because there it is way deep. So I just wanted to attack all the great bats I could. We'll see how it works. It could be murky, but the strategy is going to be very interesting to see who wins these things because it's the early drafts. We don't know what's going to happen. Half the guys weren't signed when we started. Injuries, spring training. You could have half a roster that the season starts. It's going to be some pretty fun stuff. But the other part is only it's $50, which is cheap for NFBC standards. And I'm using it to really ramp up for the other drafts. Like, how are you utilizing Gladiator? Not just to kind of fill teams out, obviously, but to kind of prep for your other, like your DCs and your other real leagues is what I'm gonna call them.
It's not really something that I'm looking. I'm not really taking my strategy in the Gladiator and like trying to implement that into a DC. I think it's just too different of a format. Whereas in DCs you can kind of build your roster with a lot of rookies and stuff like that towards the end, high upside guys, injury prone guys, like somebody like Buxton. There's just no chance I'm taking him in the Gladiator. Somebody like Bryce Harper, there's no chance I'm taking him in the Gladiator, but he makes tons of sense in a DC because if you only miss half the season, you can still implement somebody else off your bench to cover that the other half of the season. So, the stats aren't, too bad between Harper plus replacement. Whereas in a Gladiator, you're just going to be taking a zero for 3 months. And so they're different strategies. The one thing I am doing the same in both is kind of what I mentioned earlier, that I'm going with bats and I'm going with at least one closer earlier. In Gladiators, I'm generally taking the second closer a little bit earlier. Whereas in DCs, this is something I implemented last year for my strategy. I was doing a lot of one elite closer and then a bunch of specs. I do like that in DCs again, and that's kind of the strategy I'm going to go with there.
Yeah, so similar with you. And you made a good point there on like the Gladiators compared to like your DCs and your 50s is, I can't even draft Harper as much as I love him. He's out for half the season. And a DC, if you draft properly, you're like, okay, cool, I'll bring you back in like July. And like you could kind of find a way to make it work. Buxton, like all these guys, even Tim Anderson, I won't touch because the dude just doesn't play games. Like it's just so many guys and nothing's perfect because everyone gets hurt, but there's a slew of guys where like Luis Robert, who I love, not touching him in the Gladiator, just not happening. It's a weird deal. We're gonna talk about him later actually, but it is a definitely different philosophy. But the reason I like him so much is what it's helped me with a lot for my prep already is it's really pointed out like depth of certain player pools in a big, big way. Like you can do your research and get ideas, but like you'll look at ADP sheets or something and be like, okay, well, I can make arguments for X, Y, and Z. You get in that draft room and that stuff gets dark quick, like real quick. I mentioned third base earlier. For most that pay attention, five player outfielders in a 15 team dries up quick. What positions it could be those two? Are there anything else you're seeing that it gets ugly pretty quick in the positions?
Yeah, it's outfield and third base for sure. There's really no question about it. If you look at third base, the last guy that I'm really comfortable in taking is probably like, Gunnar Henderson, him and Bregman, and they both go in the sixth round. So, if I don't have a third base locked up in the first six rounds, it can get pretty dicey. Yeah. Outfield is something that's I've always thought this. I've always liked to attack outfield early. And this year, even more so. There's just, again, it's five outfielders in a 15-team league. And you're looking at, like guys like Jake McCarthy's going in the ninth round. it's not that I have anything against Jake McCarthy, but he was kind of like a flash in the pan last year. Like, yeah. Now you're spending a ninth round pick on him. Like, that's, but that's kind of what, you know, just the way it goes. Like Taylor Ward, same thing. He's going in the 10th round. So it's like, you know, these guys are just far from guaranteed. And then you got, you know, you still have a bunch of outfielders that, you know, kind of underperformed last year. You know, Chris Bryant was hurt all year. Tyler O'Neill underperformed and hurt. These guys are all going at premium picks. So, you know, it's just something outfield I like to get at least one or two early and kind of go from there.
100% with you. I've been doing that in Gladiators and my 50s. I've been doing it's. I actually am in a 50 right now. I think I have all five outfielders through 12 rounds, which I've never done that quick. But it's just been one of those, like, as the draft's been falling to me, I'm like, I still like depth at other positions. And I'm just like, okay, I'm just going to keep filling this thing up. And I'd rather have my backups have some upside than, you know, how it goes in some of those deep rounds. And you're just like, well, they might play for a month. Like, that's what you're hoping for. And so it's a little different. But outfield does get weird, because especially in the Gladiator format. You need all those at-bats you can get. So the longer you wait, you're getting guys that might not have full-time roles or more of a maybe strong side of a platoon, but still a platoon. And that's just one of those deals that, you know, it sounds silly because injuries will happen, but, you know, every time you lose a set of at-bats in a game, it's going to add up in a big way. So that little stuff helps as well. So.
Yeah, and one other thing with the Gladiator with a little bit different strategy is I generally am targeting higher batting average players a little more just because injuries – happen, your batting average doesn't really get affected that much. Same with your, you know, the ERA and WHIP. So those are, you know, three important categories to try to really build up, and then you just hope for health for the rest of your roster to, you know, take the counting stats to another level.
Yeah, it makes, like, there's certain guys I've been a big backer up in recent years, but like everyone says, oh, they suck, they don't try guys out and whatever. I'm like, I get it, but in Gladiator, guys like to me, like Cal Quantrill and stuff later are tremendous just because they get the ratios and they can help you when you do take that 6 and 7 starter later that you're talking about that might kind of hurt you a little bit. He can kind of like even things out a little. So it's just a weird way to go about it, but there's certain guys that definitely to me have more appeal in those formats just for stability's sake, hoping that stays in 2023.
Marcus Stroman.
Yeah, you took him. I think you took him the other night in our draft. I'm like, he's boring. He doesn't strike guys out, but man, you know, those ratios are pretty as consistent as they come, and that's all you care about that point in the draft. So yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, his WHIP has been solid the last couple of years, and you know, his WHIP used to not be very good. It was always kind of a downfall. One of the reasons I kind of avoided him because that between the WHIP and the lack of strikeouts, but his WHIP has been really solid the last couple of years. He doesn't give up a lot of home runs. So he's just like, that's like a perfect Gladiator target in my opinion.
Yeah. So we got third base, we got outfield for depth wise in the negative situation. Are there certain positions that you're seeing, you know, what I'm willing to wait on so I can attack my relief pitchers, my third base, my outfield? You're like, I trust the depth at these positions.
Believe it or not, catcher is, in my opinion, pretty deep.
My man. Yes.
Yeah, it's the deepest that I can remember it being.
Uh-huh.
Where
a lot I'm going to clip that to send that to people that call me an idiot for liking catcher so much this year.
I mean, to be honest, like, catchers is – it's kind of boring to talk about, but honestly, it can really make or break your team because if you can get – good production out of, especially in two catcher leagues, you get good production out of both catchers. It's such a leg up on the advantage, leg up on the competition.
Yep, it's tremendous. And the part of like the depth part you mentioned, especially these Gladiators, if you trust your knowledge of the depth and what you're comfortable with, you can wait instead of taking one of those early guys. Because we can all acknowledge how great the JTRs and those guys are. Like, they're phenomenal. But I think in this format, more than anything, where you need such quality that you can get at each position, I think sacrificing like a third outfielder or something at that point in the draft instead of taking one of these catchers later is a big trade-off in my mind that I've started to – it's only been a couple drafts, but I figured that out pretty quickly doing catcher research and everything that I'm with you. Outside of like the elite guys, there's a big pool of very similar players. And they're still good. They're still good, but they're very similar. It's a big pool. So just be comfortable there basically.
Another position I think is second base. I think it's crazy. You can see all the second basemen that kind of, you know, basically busted last year. Jorge Polanco, Brandon Lau, Jonathan India. Those guys are all going at a huge discount now.
Big discount. We just released our second base rankings and Gaining the Edge, and Curlin, myself, and Jorge do the positions because Simeone's the elitist that does pitching. So the three of us were doing hitters, and the whole last week when we were doing second base prep, we were all joking that, like, after like the top five or six, maybe seven second basemen, it feels ugly, but it's deep ugly. Like, they're so similar. Because you mentioned the guys coming off injuries, and there's like the Colton Wong, so I love, like, nothing flashy, but he's like, there's a whole bunch of players like that as you go down second base. Where, again, if you're comfortable there, you don't have to push the envelope on your Altuves and, you know, Albie's off of injury and those kind of guys. So, definitely another avenue to look at a second base. So, we're on the same page there. First base is not as deep as it once was, which is interesting to pay attention to. But shortstop's another one where it doesn't feel as deep as usual, Fish. I don't know about you. Like, it's there, but it's like you start getting stuck in the Jorge Mateo worlds and stuff, and it doesn't leave you all warm and fuzzy.
Yeah, no, short's an issue if you don't get it within, you know, the first 7-8 rounds. There's I'm thrilled with Wander Franco in the seventh, Willy Adames. I'm even fine with Jeremy Pena, even though he's probably not a huge target for me, but I'm fine with him. I like Amed Rosario a lot. He's going to, you know, get a lot of counting stats, give you some speed, good average, and he's going in the ninth in DCs. So that's a good target, I think. Nico Horner is another one.
He's going to gain short. He's going to gain shorter second. He's going to gain whatever he doesn't have yet. He'll gain that pretty quickly because of the moves the Cubs are making. So that'll something to consider for those drafting those deeper leagues. So
yeah, far. But after Nico Horner, it's ugly. Like, I don't want anything to do with Baez. I'm not interested in Jorge Mateo, Mondesi. I do have a few shares of Ezekiel Tovar with Colorado, but, you know, he's far from proven. Same with CJ Abrams. Like, CJ Abrams, I'll take some shots on those guys, but
not as my starter.
They're gonna do.
Not as my starter. Like, that's not what I want. And it's funny you mentioned Willy Adames and Jeremy Pena. I think I've done two Gladiators and 250 so far. I'm in my third 50. I think I have Adames or Pena in probably four of the five. Like, I'm in that same world where I'm okay, like, kind of waiting because I get like J-Ram early or something or an outfielder. So I'm like, oh, well, I'm not going to go to the elite shortstops. Let's wait. But you play chicken and make sure you get one of those guys before it's all said and done. What other early takeaways, if you have any, for this draft season? I know you've done a few DCs. You've done your Gladiators. You're getting ramped up for your DC stretch here pretty soon. What other thoughts do you have on this early draft season?
It's just the pitching, like the amount of pitching in rounds five through 11. There's just so many good pitchers there. It's kind of got me off of what I did last year, basically aces and bases. Like, I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to get any Cole or Burns this year. Just obviously those guys are amazing, but it's like, is Zach Gallen that much different than those guys who's going three rounds later? I mean, Yu Darvish had another huge year. He's going in the sixth again. You know, Joe Musgrove just had a really nice year. Tristan McKenzie. I mean, there's just so many starting pitchers that are going in those, you know, four through 11 or so. It's going to be really tough for me to go. First of all, I think Pocket Aces is just completely off the board. I don't even think it's an option anymore. I mean, obviously, if you're picking for the back end 15, you get Cole Burns, you're feeling pretty good about yourself, right? Like, it's tough to go wrong with that. But, you know, you're just, as long as you're able to catch up on the bats, which there's a lot of good bats too. That's another takeaway. The first 10 rounds is just littered with so much talent. So you can kind of, if you fall behind early, there's still plenty of guys there in any category. There's still plenty of guys to catch up on.
It's the old adage that some of the best players talk about time and time again is when you're prepping for your draft, like, prep your draft backwards, work backwards. Because those first 10 rounds, like you said, you can do damage. So start prepping from like 20 to 11 and find what you like in those rounds to help you with your first 10 rounds. That'd be my two cents. Because, the first 10 rounds, you can almost do whatever kind of setup you want for your roster. And you should feel okay walking away from that and see where it goes. So I'm 100% with you. The depth is pretty crazy right now. I'll have to figure out a new name for you, because if it's not aces and bases, saves and I don't know, I'm gonna have to figure this one out. Like, we're gonna have to get something for you, because I thought we had to deal with RotoWire in the works, but I don't know if we're going to anymore if we're not gonna rock it. So because that was so good last year, aces and bases. But you're right. You don't need to as much unless you go bases, bases first, then go aces. Look, you're going closers. We got to figure something out. Yeah, we'll work on this. Well,
yeah.
People that listen to my show and John's show, In the Cut Fantasy, need to figure that one out. And before we head into some ADP debates, plug away your show. Like, let everybody know what you guys got going over there. You and Ryan and putting up some good stuff over there.
Yeah, Ryan Venancio and I came up with an idea in the summer to do a fantasy baseball and basketball podcast. There's really no fantasy basketball podcast that kind of, you know, talk about the NFBKC, which is the basketball format on the Play NFC site. And so, and obviously Ryan and I both enjoy baseball, and he's super knowledgeable with the baseball end of things too. So, you know, we made it a dual sport podcast, and we had a lot of fun with the basketball. We did some live shows with that. And now we're into baseball, and we have been off for a couple of weeks because just some issues going on with us and, you know, sick and holidays and stuff like that. So, but we'll be back on shortly here again, covering, you know, each of the positions, and we'll probably do some live streams as well. But yeah, check us out over at In the Cut Fantasy Sports Podcast.
Yeah, two good guys. I'd highly, highly recommend it. Ryan's been on the show a few times as well. Two very, very good listens. And for those of basketball, like Fish said, there ain't much basketball content out there. So that's a very good niche you guys are putting together, especially in the doldrums of baseball season. You can kind of tickle the itch for everything else. Let's do a little ADP talk. You know, why not? It's going to be something we'll do pretty much all off season, but it's fun to get some early thoughts here. See who's kind of jumbled together. You and I both know this will likely change a lot going forward, because it's a good idea of kind of the popular names, what people are kind of debating literally in drafts right now as we speak. So let's start with the catcher's position here. And early on, catcher wise, you know, we talked about the depth of catcher, but if you do take one early, the fourth and fifth catchers off the board are Salvi Perez and Adley Rutschman, about 64 and 66 overall, give or take, in draft champions over the last month. It's a very, very interesting deal. So you got Salvi, who's going to DH primarily, it looks like, with Melendez back, or maybe not. Maybe Melendez DHs and plays the outfield. Who knows? But Salvi should play his games barring injuries. But you got Adley, who kind of took over last year and swept the world by storm once he got comfortable Fish. So how do you approach these two? And I know some of these, we might not even want any of the guys involved. We might just be passing on them in general. But say you had to take one of these two, where do you stand?
For me, it's Salvi. It's pretty clear for me too. There's so much more power upside there. I think that, you know, I love Adley, and he's going to be obviously amazing for his whole career, but he's still pretty young. I don't think he's into his, you know, prime power seasons yet, but I do think that Adley's going to play pretty close to every day, just like Salvi is. So I do like that aspect of things for both of them, but I just think that Selvie's got the much more power potential. I think for Adley to really jump him, you know, barring injury for either one of them, he's going to need to hit somewhere around 280, 290. And I don't know if he's quite there yet. I mean, he's got the ability to, but, you know, only hit 254 last year. But yeah, I think we're just a year or two ahead of Adley's prime, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. This was a tough one when I've done my catching research. It's like I could see people putting a flag on either side of this fence. To me, kind of a tiebreaker would be that we've seen it from Salvi enough. And if you're taking a catcher this early, I want that power for sure. Kind of goes to what we talked about with the depth of catcher. You can get a lot of like 10 to 13 home run guys later on. And, you know, Adley should eventually, if he's not going to this year, be more than 10 to 13. But at the same time, if I'm going to get a guy that hits like 250 with 13 home runs and okay, counting stats, I can get something similar probably later on at the catcher's position, and I can go elsewhere where Salvi legit can hit 30 to 40 home runs and you wouldn't be shocked. And especially with that Royals lineup with Melendez and Vinny P and Bobby Witt, you'd hope they take another step forward with what they're doing there. And if they do, and Salvi's hitting third or fourth, that's going to be a beautiful thing. So I'm with you. If I'm going catchers early and this is a scenario I have, I am going to go Salvi as well.
And I'll say one thing about each of them. One more thing I should say about each of them. Salvador Perez is going to get you way more RBIs, and Adley's going to get you way more runs. If Adley's going to hit second, you know, his RBI opportunities just aren't going to be there. The bottom of the Orioles lineup isn't very good. And then you got, you know, Cedric Mullins, and that's really it. So the RBI totals are going to be
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Far more in favor of Salvador, and runs are going to be far more in favor of Adley.
Great point. Great point. We'll stick at the catcher's position here. For those that are going to quickly figure it out, I got about two for each position. That's how it's going to go here. So catcher's position here. This one's fun to me because these guys just got involved in a trade together, and they're getting drafted next year. The 10th and 11th catcher off the board, Sean Murphy, ADP of about pick 137. And William Contreras, about 139.5. Now, William is now the favorite catcher in John Fish's household because he's with the Milwaukee Brewers. But this is a really interesting move, and I got my strong thoughts on this one. But I want to hear Fish's first because, I'm going to wait. If I'm not going to say anything else, I'm going to let you give your thoughts here.
Okay, so this one is super close for me. First of all, I think they both get a major bump. Especially William Contreras. William Contreras, in my opinion, was a huge fade until this trade happened. Now I'm all about him. So I don't know who I would choose between both of them. So I know that's not the answer we want to hear. I like them both. If I don't have any catchers and I'm drafting from the one spot or the 15th spot, I wouldn't hesitate double tapping them. I like both of them quite a bit. I think that William Contreras, first of all, I was off him because on Atlanta, he was only going to get half the at-bats. Like, I don't care what anybody says. He was only, like, they're going to play Travis d'Arnaud a lot. Travis d'Arnaud was good last season. Then I could all of a sudden just sit him. And I know the DH and all that stuff, but they have plenty of other players that are going to be, you know, there's some injuries, some guys are out. So those guys would be back. But now that he's on Milwaukee, now he's got nobody to worry about because the rest of the Brewers team is horrendous. So I don't need to go on a rant about the Brewers. For Sean Murphy going from Oakland pitcher's park with a terrible lineup to now being with Atlanta, even if he's hitting a little bit further down the lineup, it's so much better. The numbers are going to be a little bit higher. The counting stats, RBIs, runs. I would imagine the home runs go up a little bit. I don't think he's going to play quite as much as he did.
Nope.
So I guess if I had to choose, I would take William Contreras over Sean Murphy.
We're still friends. That's good. I had a few questions. I was going to like ask some really snarky questions, but we're going to leave it at that then. Because one of my biggest questions is, you said William was not going to play at least half the at-bats with Travis. Well, how does Murphy get that luxury if Travis is so good still?
Well, because I think that he almost has to. Like, they paid a pretty penny for him. Yeah. It was a little bit of a head-scratcher for some Braves fans. So, you know, they kind of have to make it look good. So I think he's going to, even though I said some of these other guys will be DH, and I think he's going to get some DH games just 100%. To bump those numbers up.
I agree. The hard part, the Murphy dilemma, and where I'm kind of sitting is the dude played more games than any catcher in baseball last year, had more at bats than any catcher in baseball. Like, it's ungodly what he did, thinking he played for such a bad team. And what he could have done in a good team, in a good ballpark with that much playing time, goodness gracious. But so it's like, okay, does he keep his quality of play up on a better team with fewer games? And how does that, like, that's where the fun guessing game starts to rely. Where now you got William, who's still at 20 like homers, and he could probably play 25 to 30 more games in a very still hitter friendly ballpark. And so now he's going to get a boost, you'd imagine. So now it's kind of like one of those things. I'm Team William. There's guys throughout draft season you plant flags on and you're going to live and die with. William is one of them. I have him in every single draft I have done so far. So I might need to diversify eventually. but I was getting him before the trade when the value was really nice. And I think he moves up for me, and this is where it gets maybe stupid to many. He's like a top five or six catcher for me with 130 games in Milwaukee, just for the power. He, why can't he be Salvi Perez? Why, like, or better with that kind of power? I might be overthinking this. I might be overzealous. I might just be telling myself because I drafted him everywhere. This is what he's doing. I just think he has that potential too. Like, the dude's got crazy power. We'll see. I think the fun debate that many should have, or for those that like to write articles and stuff, do a Wilson Contreras versus William Contreras debate. I think that's a very intriguing one. Yeah. I think it's closer than people think. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. I think with William Contreras, I think his home run per fly ball was pretty high last year, but I think it's going to be offset because he's going to be playing so much more. So yeah. I think that, yeah, he's going to be he's now a target for me. I was upset, and then I was like, well, I got a lot of draft season left, so I can still get my amount of shares. Like, so I've settled down. Interesting.
It's going to be interesting. That's for darn sure. Let's go to the first base position here, and this is kind of a me versus a fish one from the past. The ninth first base on the board is Rhys Hoskins at ADP of 121. The 10th off the board is CJ Cron at 122, and that's flip-flop from the early November drafts already. CJ's falling. I don't know if it's the narrative of how bad he is on the road, so you have to play that game. You can almost in DCs, depending on – because last year, like, the Rocky schedule was beautiful. It's like 1 week in Coors, 1 week off. Like, there was no, like, mid – switches that often in Coors. So if you can play the game right with CJ, he's still a beast. But I think you can even admit it that the road splits are tough with CJ. But who do you got between Hoskins and CJ Cron?
This is a close one for me. I had a lot of both of these guys last year, so I think I'd probably choose Hoskins just because the Cron, yeah, away and home, that the splits are just insane. I think I would just choose Hoskins. Just, I guess in a DC, if I already had a first baseman and maybe I even already had a corner and Cron is on the board, maybe I take a shot there because then I can in NFBC, you can change out hitters for the weekend. So, you know, maybe if that, in that situation, I already have a first and a corner and I have utility open and they're both on the board, maybe I go with Cron because I can switch another hitter in there when he is on the road. But in general, yeah, I'd probably go Hoskins.
Yeah, I'm still team Hoskins, but I will fully admit after I did my first base episode with Toby, he doesn't stand out as much as he used to because the value isn't – like, it used to be such value-based for me with Rhys, and still the ninth first baseman on the board isn't bad, but he stood out like a sore thumb where he used to be going, where now you look at ADP and it's a little trickier. But when we're doing just Rhys versus CJ, because that is the question, I got to stick to my rules here, I'm going to go Rhys Hoskins too because I am a believer, like, he's a 250 to 260 hitter. That's who he is. If he stays healthy, which he's done more than people give him credit for. Like, everyone says he's injury prone. He really isn't as much as you want to give him credit for. And he's a 30 to 40 home run dude in a very good lineup. And without Bryce there for the first half, he's going to hit in probably a pretty darn good spot for the first half of the season with the guys. And I don't think it's going to hinder him too much when Bryce comes back. But I think there's a lot of production there. We know Schwarber. We know Real Muto. They got Trey Turner. Like, there's not much not to like there. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Rhys as well. That's just because I think home road don't matter for Rhys. And I'm going to stick with that one. All right, the next first base one, though, this is – interesting is the way I'll put it, because there's layers to this, like an onion, if you really want to and peel it. 14 first baseman on the board is Anthony Rizzo with an ADP of 157. Ryan Mountcastle with an ADP of 162 is the 15th first baseman off the board. Rizzo's coming back to the Yankees, which is perfect for that swing of his. There were some less than desirable traits from Rizzo in 2022, but the power was not. That was there. That was beautiful. And you got Mountcastle, who was a beast, and he got screwed hard by the new fences in Baltimore. Like, the numbers show – I think it was anywhere from like 7 to 10 home runs he lost out on. That might not change because the fences aren't changing, but something to think about. So Rizzo versus Mountcastle, how do you look at that one?
This one's Rizzo for me pretty easily. Back to the Yankees, it's just a perfect situation for him. And I think that we see his batting average come up a little bit. I mean, he's not going to be super elite or anything, but, you know, he had a 216 BABIP, and I think maybe the shift will help out a little bit with that. And, you know, he still doesn't strike out like barely at all. So he's, you know, he's back in Yankee Stadium. So the short porch and right, I think that everything's just kind of status quo for him with maybe a little bit more upside. Mountcastle. I do have a lot of Mountcastle, and I actually like Mountcastle. I think he's going to be a solid contributor, and I think he's like, you know, 23 to 25 home runs with good RBI numbers and an average that doesn't hurt you. So if you do miss out on first base, like, I'm not completely against taking him. I already have a couple times, like I said. But yeah, the fence is moving back, definitely killed him.
Yeah, we're on the same page there, because early in draft season, I was kind of, we all have our biases. And Rizzo, I just kind of like block out. I'm like, no, you know, you're so lucky. I'm like, why am I complaining? He's going back to that ballpark. What am I? I'm a freaking idiot. I'm complaining about the wrong thing here. And I have a lot of I have some Mountcastle as well, because they had the 23, 25 home runs, and that's legit. And, you know, maybe he pulls some more. He hits those on the road next year instead of at home. Who knows? Like, the dude's talent is very, very real. And you mentioned Rushman scoring more runs. That's because Mountcastle will be one of the guys that would be driving him in. So that's a perk as well. So, like you said, if you kind of miss out on first base, which can happen in these drafts, I have no problem walking away with Mountcastle. That's totally fine with me. But I'm starting, the more and more I've looked into Rizzo since doing that show with Toby, is I am starting to buy in. Like, the average is horrific last year, but we've seen him be a much better hitter in the past. And without the shift, maybe that helps him. Who knows? That's pure speculation. But his OBP skills are undeniable, and the power is undeniable. So, I am starting to buy into Rizzo a lot more, and I wonder if more people will, because if I'm dumb enough to do it, I think others will too. So the ADP maybe comes up, but for now, he could be one of the better first base, I don't know if value is the right word, but like, I guess floors, first base floors. Like, you know, you kind of know what you're getting with Rizzo, but there's upside at that point in the draft. So kind of a fan of that.
Yep, I agree.
All right, let's go to the second base position, and this one hurts because it's been a rough go here, but we got a three-man run here. Jazz Chisholm is the second baseman at pick basically 45. Altuve at pick 46. And I threw Ozzie Albies in there at pick 53. He's not as close, but that's kind of the three-pack before it drops off a little bit here. We got Chisholm. Could have had literally like a 30-30 season or 25-25 until he got hurt. Altuve had an amazing 2022. Then Albies got hurt as well. So do you go off the old man in the great year or one of the two young guys hoping they bounce back from injury? This is a tricky one for even me. So how are you looking at this one, Fish?
So Ozzie Albies, I'll start with him. He's definitely third for me in this trio. But I think Dansby actually leaving might move him back up into the two slot, which would be huge for him. But if not, then, you know, he's kind of just status quo. But for me, it's Altuve, number one still. He's going to have the much higher batting average. And we saw the steals come back a little bit. So, you know, with the new rules, like, I guess I'd expect 15 at least from him again. And we've seen high 20s power, and just his ability to stay on the field has been much better than Jazz. Now, Jazz is super exciting, right? He's got the power speed combo. The problem with Jazz is the park isn't great and the team is horrific. Yep. So you're looking at very, very low RBI totals. And I know Altuve was down RBI total this past year, but he was, you know, significantly higher in 2021 with about the same amount of games played. So I would expect the RBIs to go somewhere up a little bit from last year with Altuve. But yeah, for Jazz, it's just ability to stay on the field. It's a subpar lineup, and it's, you know, the batting average just isn't going to be nearly as high as Altuve.
Yeah, this one hurts. I'm going Altuve one for sure, because especially that early in the draft, like, you want to, I like taking my chances later in a draft. Altuve is about as consistent as they come. And that's not even, and when you're drafting Altuve, you're not even counting like a high stolen base total. So when he throws that in, it's gravy. It's like, you're looking at average, decent pop actually still, scoring a bunch of runs, and then kind of throw me in some steals and some RBIs, and we're good. And he's going to do that, I think, until he gets hurt. Like, I don't see how he doesn't in that lineup leading off. So I'm with you on Altuve. I think I have Albie second, mainly because I like that ballpark better. He hasn't shown to be injury prone. It's like his first big injury, so I'm hoping for a bounce back. Where, and this is why it pains me, for anybody that knows me, I love Jazz Chisholm. He's the, like you said, he's fun to watch. He is very good. There's no denying that. But the dude, I hate to put the label, starting to maybe be injury prone. This is like a trend now. Like, this is a yearly trend, and it sucks to say because he's so young. I hope he proves me wrong. If I have to go through these three, it's going to be Altuve, Albies, and Chaz for me, and that really hurts, really, because this will be the year he stays healthy and just totally goes scorched earth on, and then I'll have to do the Toby Tour of Shame, basically, with Jazz Chisholm. That's going to happen. It's going to really, really sting. Let's go to the next one here. We got Tommy Edman. This is a fun one. Tommy Tanks. Fish was on Team Tommy Tanks last year. 6 second baseman off the board, pick 83. But you got Andrés Giménez, who finally showed the pedigree everyone dreamed about. And now he's a 7 second baseman off the board at pick 86. They're going 3 picks apart. Power speed combo. Maybe more power with Giménez. Maybe more speed with Edman. A lot to like with both these guys. They're both young. So lots to like, kind of maybe what you want with your team. Who knows? How are you going with these two?
Oh, this one's easy for me. This is Tommy Edman. There's no question about it. We just saw Edman basically do what I thought that he would do this past season. And I was expecting 15, 25. I was expecting a little bit more in the home run department. He finished just shy of that. But he stole, I think, 30 bases again. So it's Tommy Edman for me. I know everybody's concerned about where he hits in the lineup. Well, in this comparison here, Andrés Giménez also does not hit the top of the lineup. So it's easily Tommy Edman for me. I have some concerns with Giménez. I think the speed is pretty legit, but I'm not sure we see that high of an average again. He had a really high BABIP. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just, I don't know. His K rate was fine. He doesn't draw a lot of walks, which I really don't care too much about when with my fantasy guys, if they walk or not, unless it's an OBP league, but I don't play OBP leagues. So I think the steals are pretty legit, but it's tough to see that power output again. But I guess 15 and 25 isn't out of the question for him either. But I definitely think that the batting average comes down, no question.
I could see the bad average for sure. The one thing I like, and it's not taking it for Tommy. We've seen Tommy do it for 2 seasons now. We know who Tommy Edman is. If he leads off, he's elite. We know these things about Tommy Edman. I'm going to take the upside here on Andrés Giménez. Call me foolish. Call me what you wish. And this is like a young Jazz to me, like 2020 type stuff. Jazz doesn't hit for average either. I'm fully aware of that. But Giménez is 24. So he's still developing his power. He's still developing. Like, you saw a strikeout rate drop almost 5% last year. Hits the ball on the ground a ton, but his barrel rate increased, like, doubled last year. We saw, like, things go in the right direction. And in that team, you know, maybe just hanging out with J.R. does wonders for this guy. Like, just like, hey, just come under my wing. Learn a few things, kid. We'll figure it out. I don't know. I'm gonna go out on that one. I know there's the Tommy Tanks world. I'm going to get probably, you know, Rob D. coming at me now, because that's what they'll call me, a meatball or something. But I'll take it. I like meatballs. Look at me, we're good. But I'm gonna go Giménez on this one. I put it there on purpose. I knew Fish's answer, so I wanted to have some fun with this. We can't agree on everything, so we gotta have a little fun on the show.
Yeah, just for Giménez, chase rate was 8th percentile.
I don't disagree with what you said. There's a lot to be terrified with. Trust me, it's like it has a little Javi Baez feel to it. I
do agree with you that, you know, he is 24 years old, so, you know, he's kind of coming into his prime right now. We did see a little bit of a breakout, so can he build on it or not? That's kind of the question. And I think he takes a little bit of a step back, and you think he takes a step forward. So yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah, it's gonna be one of those. And trust me, he's not like William Contreras. I'm not going heavy on Andrés Giménez in my drafts, but if he's there, I'm not afraid to take him, unlike some other players. It's not a full-on target, let's put it that way. Let's head to shortstop, where this one is kind of, what do you need for your team, is the way I look at this one. The seventh shortstop, the switch since I did this morning. Sixth shortstop off the board, O'Neill Cruz at ADP of 70. Corey Seager's the seventh at ADP of 71. And then we have Dansby Swanson, the eighth at ADP of 79. So you got Cruz, Seager, Swanson, Fish. How do you go about these three?
I want Seager. He is going to hit for a much higher average than he did this past season. This is another guy that just, he does not strike out. And, you know, it was his first year on the Rangers in that ballpark, you know, in that league. And he had a horrific BABIP, and the shift is going to be another thing that helps him quite a bit. Now, obviously, you're not going to get the speed that you get from O'Neill Cruz. So if I draft the way I draft, you know, I get my stolen bases early, this is where Corey Seager becomes a huge target, because Corey Seager's going to have 30 home runs roughly, you know, give or take, and he's going to have elite counting stats. The home run or the RBIs and the runs are going to be much higher than O'Neill Cruz, because the lineup, you know, O'Neill Cruz strikes out too much still. Obviously, we love the tools. He hits the ball as hard as anybody. He can run as fast as anybody. His throws from shortstop to first are insane. But yeah, I think we still see Corey Seager really be the best option here. He had a .242 BABIP last year, only a 15.5% K rate, and only hit .242, so or .245. But yeah, I think we see him get close to 300 again, like he has been for multiple seasons of his career. Dansby is a guy that I do have quite a few shares of. Believe it or not, just because kind of where he's going, I think he kind of goes a little bit after those guys. So if I do miss out on those guys, I do get Dansby, and I like Dansby. I think he's going to be, really solid for the Cubs. You know, I'm a Brewers fan. I hate the Cubs, but I love a lot of their players. I love what they're doing. The Cubs fans should be really excited about their team, I think. But yeah, Dansby, he just came off a huge year, career year, right? And I don't think he gets quite to those numbers just because he's with Chicago now instead of Atlanta, but I think he gets somewhere close there. I think he's a nice power speed combo, and the counting stats should be there with him hitting up towards the top of the lineup. But I would take Seager first. I probably would go Dansby second, just because the counting stats are going to be so much better than O'Neill Cruz. And then I'd take Cruz third.
Yeah, we're on the same page there. Cruz, to me, just has a lot more proving to do. There's a lot of it's exciting, like you said, but there's lots of swing and miss in that swing. Lots of swing and miss in that swing. So, I'll watch him on baseball, MLB tonight on MLB Network, and enjoy it from that. Maybe I'll play DFS with him once in a while, but that's about it. Seager, it's all about the batting average for me. He's got that. If you need steals later, Swanson's the guy. So I have it, Seager, Swanson, Cruz. The fun one for me, this wasn't on the sheet, but I always think of these two together, Seager and Xander. And Xander's going 20 picks later. They're very similar to me, and because they usually both hit for pretty good average. You know, Seager hit the 33 homers last year, but he's usually more of a, low to mid-20s guy. That's what Xander is. To me, they have a very similar profile, and now they're going 20 picks apart, unlike the way it used to be. So would it be like, if you like Seager, would you be willing to, if you miss Seager, wait for Xander, or do you still want a guy in between like a Swanson or Tommy Tanks is going in between those two as well? Would those be guys you look at, or would you wait for a guy like Xander? That maybe not get you the steals, but get you. He's projected to maybe clean up in San Diego.
Yeah, I'm totally fine with Xander. I actually have, I think I still have the max pick on Xander in round 8 of a DC. Okay. I couldn't believe it. I think I have the max pick on him and Jose Abreu in the same draft.
Oh, boy.
Xander in the 8th.
Stability, man. Stability.
Jose Abreu in the 11th. Yeah. I tweeted out, I'm like, what? Nobody likes these guys anymore? Like, what's going on here? Because they're boring, and I'm not really sure what to expect from Xander power and speed wise. New league, I'm a little bit nervous about those. I think, maybe he goes 20 home runs and 5 steals. But yeah, the batting average and the counting stats especially are going to be through the roof in that lineup.
For sure. Another shortstop one is kind of funny because we mentioned these names earlier, but kind of the cutoff point, if you kind of want it shortstop, and here we are at the cutoff point. Of shortstop, Willy Adames is the 13th shortstop off the board to pick 100. Jeremy Payne is the 14th to pick 108. Adames' power, and this is a guy that for years, everyone gets similar to, I'm not going to say Jimenez and him are the same, but forever, people thought, because Adames has been around for so long, that he was so old, but he's not. He's now going to be 20. He's only 27 now. And when he was at the Rays, he was super, super young. So the power just continued to develop. Average is what it is, but we've seen that. We saw Jeremy Payne have a rookie of the year type season, and he's going to be on a great ball club. So how do you go about the Adames-Jeremy Payne situation?
I would take Willy Adames, and that's not even just being a homer. I think there's more power with Adames. The counting stats are going to be pretty solid. He's going to hit right in the heart of the Brewers lineup, and he's going to need some steals too, which, maybe he gets – maybe he's somebody with the new rules that he can take a little bit of a jump on in the stolen base department. I'm still curious to see how that's going to work out. But, yeah, I would go with Adames. I think you're getting three solid categories in home runs, runs, and RBIs. Batting average, I think .238 that he hit last year. I think he's going to come up from that. That's his career low, actually. by a pretty good amount too. So I think he's going to come back up to the 260 range, and all the stolen bases you get from him is just gravy.
Yeah, I'm all in on Willie. To me, Adames should be near Dansby Swanson. I'm super high on Adames. So I find him as a potential value. I know that's a word everybody hates to hear, especially this time of the year. But if you just look at comparable players at ADPs, I think Adames is kind of getting the short of the stick on this one in my mind. But I don't mind it if he falls back here to Jeremy Pena. But yeah, Adames over Pena for me as well. We'll hit the hot corner here. This is an interesting one because we assume Rafael Devers is going to be playing third base for Boston this year. He should. He's still under contract, but there's some interesting conversations out there in the Twitter streets. He's the fourth third baseman off the board at ADP 19. Yeah, Austin Riley, who backed up the big season. That was the big question last year. Can he back it up? He backed it up ADP of 21. So do you go Devers or Riley, the guy that's done it more than two seasons, or the guy that's done really well for two seasons?
Yeah, I'm still going to go with Devers here.
Even on the depleted roster.
Yeah, I am. I get it. I understand. But I don't know. I just think that the Devers is a little bit more of a guarantee to perform. We've seen it for, multiple seasons now. And, yeah, and Riley's done it too. I mean, he backed it up last year. He was terrific. I have no problem with him going at the end of the mid to end second as well. So I would just, it's slight lean for Devers.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on Devers. I've always been a huge Devers fan, but Riley's done has been impressive. There's no doubting that back-to-back years. It's been next to amazing. I guess what Devers can do, like he's done it every year. This is what Devers does no matter what's around him. So I'm gonna roll with Devers with you as well, but I can't fault the Riley thing. I guess that's why they're both going in the second round. So have fun with that. The next third baseman one, though, is interesting, especially when we talked about how this position falls off. Well, yeah, Gunnar Henderson's long gone by now. So we get to the 11th third baseman off the board is Ke'Bryan Hayes at pick 161. The 12th is Eugenio Suarez at 162. And the 13th is Matt Chapman at 164. And yes, none of those names sound enticing, but we'll all find their way on some roster one way or another. So Hayes, Suarez, Chapman, because in all honesty, if you miss out on Gunnar Henderson, this is pretty much the last hurrah, unless you really want to get ugly. So like, you need to find one of these guys and find a way to like him is what it comes down to.
Yeah, for me, Hayes is the clear distant third here. There's no power there, and it's just a bad lineup. I get it. The 20 steals are nice, but there's just nothing else there that I like from him. Between the other two, you're not going to get a very good batting average. They're kind of very similar in that sense. But, I mean, I think they're both going to hit close to 30 home runs, around 30 home runs, with a good amount of runs and RBIs. So they're your prototypical three-category bats. And between the two, I guess I'll take Chapman just because he's one of the best defensive, third baseman in the game. So he's always going to stay in the field, even through struggles. So, I guess I'd go Chapman, but I really like Eugenio too. So I'm good with either one of them.
Yeah, that's kind of why I'm glad you said it, because with the thing with Eugenio, he's back to 236 last year after 198 and the 202. Prior to those two rough seasons, he's perennially been an okay batting average guy. And those two bad seasons, he had a 214, 224 BABIP. He was back to 302 last year. He's been over 300 his entire career. So I think you're going to get more of the 230s. He's been even up in the 250, 260, 280s before. I'm not thinking we're going to get there, but maybe 240, 245. What you will get is 30-plus home runs, I think. And that is big this late in the draft. And that's why he stands out to me as a guy that I wouldn't be as bullish as some others might be on him. So I think I'm going to go Eugenio over Chapman, but I don't hate your argument. It's really, really close. Chapman has always been a beast. He's shown the ability to be great, great lineup. I think I'm going to go Eugenio, but both very, very good. And yes, Hayes is a distant three for me as well. All right, the outfield real quick here. The top two outfielders off the board. Can't really go wrong here, but you got Acuña Jr., pick 2.3. J-Rod, basically pick 3. So I've seen, and I know you've done draft, I've seen both of them go number 1. I've seen them go all over the place. This is kind of a whatever you feel like situation. I just want to get your thoughts on this one because they're both amazing, and I don't care which one you want to take because, it's fine. Who do you like?
Yeah, again, just to reiterate what you were saying, I'm perfectly fine with either one of them. I have taken Nakuna before J-Rod, I think twice now, actually. I don't have any J-Rod still. But, yeah, it's probably Acuna for me just because of the track record. And I think, you know, he's another year removed from the torn ACL. So I think we see the power come back, and I think we see him be the massive fantasy stud that we've seen in the past. J-Rod, I love J-Rod, but he just doesn't have the track record. So, yeah, I guess it's just Acuna based on just the track record.
Yeah, you got to, you're grasping the straws right now, and that's just what you have to do. So, like, I'm with you 100%. I go Acuna, but it's one of those I make the joke, like, give me like the fifth pick. Just that, like, or actually, give me number one. I'll take J Ram, and you guys figure out the rest. Like, you guys can take your outfielder. Just give me J Ram, I'll walk away. But that's where that one goes. It's a very fun watching every draft. Hey, which one's going to go where? Next up, though, we got a more interesting one, more potentially even one. You got Luis Robert, Lou Bob, at pick 44, 12th outfielder off the board. Then Cedric Mullins, 13th outfielder, at pick 46. Both have some power and speed here. One stays on the field longer than others. One might have a higher ceiling if he ever could stay on the field. Big conundrum here. So do you take the upside and the hope he stays and plays with Robert, or do you take Mullins, who's pretty much done it 2 years in a row? He's not 30-30, but he's still been pretty darn good.
Yeah, this is a tough one. This is really tough. I think with Cedric Mullins, you're not going to get the RBIs that you would be able to get with Lou Bob. But unfortunately, Lou Bob can't ever stay on the field. So I'd probably go, I guess, with Cedric Mullins here, just because, you know, if you're not going to be on the field, then I need to see it, right? Like, you need to see him stay healthy. He's never played a whole season. So, yeah, I mean, obviously the upside is – easily with Lou Bob, but yeah, I'll take the guaranteed what I know I'm going to get out of Mullins. I know I'm going to get 30 steals. I know I'm not going to get a zero in power, and yeah, I'll take the, you know, whatever he hits for home runs is great. I wouldn't count on more than 15, but you know, we have seen him go 30-30. So
yeah, I'm going to go Mullins too. You know, 156, 159 games played, over 670 plate appearances, 30 plus stolen bases, nearly 90 plus runs, hits for average. Just give me that consistency leading off. I love Lou Bob. Like, I think he's got, I'm not going to say it because Kyle Tucker's even better now, but a couple years ago, I thought they were very similar players when healthy. But when healthy is the key word, like we've been saying. So give me Cedric Mullins. I'll take that. And it might be boring to some, but give me that floor. I'll take that 30 stolen base upside with some power all day long. Last one we have here is another fun one for me, at least in these early research and drafts. You got Eloy Jimenez at pick 79. George Springer at pick 80. Two guys that can hit for average, can hit for power, don't steal many bases anymore, both have problems staying healthy. So this is a very interesting one with Eloy and Springer, but I have one. I know where my flag's planted. Where are you?
Yeah, I've always been a Springer guy, but he's another one that just can't stay on the field. And, you know, he's kind of getting up there now. He's 33, I believe. Eloy, it's one thing after another with him, with injuries as well. But I do think that they're with Abreu gone now, I think they can just DH him. Whether or not they do that, I don't know. I'm hoping they will, because I'm going with a lot of Eloy so far this year. I mean, he's got to stay healthy one of these years. And I think with him not playing the field nearly as much, or hopefully at all, I think we can finally see the elite four categories that he can provide. Actually, I should say elite three categories, because he's never been a huge producer in runs. But, I mean, he's got the ability to hit 300 with 40 home runs and 115, 120 RBIs. So, yeah, give me Eloy over Springer. I know Springer stole some bases last year, but give me the younger guy that's coming into his prime.
Yep, I'm Team Eloy with you as well. Like, seeing what he did when he came back from the IL, when they primarily DH'd him, looked like the guy we've been wanting. So, like you said, Abreu's out of the way. They should be able to, like, stay away from every outfield wall. Just leave him in the dugout. DH, be the next Big Poppy. Be, like, whatever. Just stay in the dugout. I'm with you. I think we'll see the guy we've all hoped for a long, long time. So, give me Eloy as well. Got two listener questions here. One's got two questions to it, but we'll get to that one shortly because Will is funny. But we'll start with Eric James Schmidt at EJ underscore Schmidt. He asks, my question is, how many Brewers is too many Brewers, or any particular team for that matter? Like, some guys like to stack, like they use a DFS philosophy, fish, mm-hmm. when they do this. Do you have any care one way or the other? Like, We've seen guys in the past, even in non-DC formats and redrafts, like go all in on the Blue Jays 2 years ago and it crushed. Like there's ways to make it work. You got to really have to the right mindset for it. But do you find a method that works for you?
I don't really worry about stacking, but yeah, it made a lot of sense when he took the Blue Jays a couple years ago. And then, you know, if you paired the Blue Jays hitters a couple years ago with the Brewers pitchers, you know, that would be a perfect match. But as far as stacking Brewers hitters this year, I would not suggest doing that. They're going to have a very subpar offense. I don't stack at all.
It's funny with the Brewers hitters, though. You can get like a value build of William Contreras, Willie Adames, Christian Yelich, and Rowdy Tellez if you're feeling frisky. Just gonna throw it out there. They're all like that middle area if you're feeling frisky. And if they somehow clicks all of a sudden, I don't think I'm gonna do it, but it's sitting right there if you look at ADP. It's very doable.
Yeah.
Okay, Willie G, Will Garofalo, who will be on the show next week for those that are care at all. He's been on some other shows lately making the rounds. Really funny dude. He's got two. It's a two-parter. We'll start with the fantasy one first. I guess they're both fantasy, actually. But let's go to the fantasy baseball one first. Give us some early ADP fish faves. So this goes to your shares, I guess. Like, who are some of your favorite players right now?
It's going to be Class A has been a huge target for me. Again, with my new strategy with DCs, getting hitters and an elite closer, so I've taken a lot of Class A right there in the middle of the second. That's my pitcher. For a hitter, I mean, I really want Kyle Tucker, but I haven't gotten any shares yet. It's been driving me insane. So I guess I can't really say him. I don't really know for a hitter. I mean, I really, really like where Altuve is going. Big fan of that. A Rosarena, I like that. It's just like that power speed combo that I like. Those are definitely two nice targets.
Love it. You like a lot of guys I like, so I'm really glad you're sticking to 15s this year. That's good. Will's got another question, though, and he knows you, and I think he knows me also because he watched me drink quite a few of these at First Pitch. He knows us. And this is, if you could create any High Noon flavor, what would it be?
It would be raspberry. It's driving me insane that they still haven't made it yet. I've been complaining about it to my managers and everything. It's like, it just doesn't make any sense. First of all, High Noon is owned by Gallo, and Gallo owns New Amsterdam Vodka. Yep. Well, the New Amsterdam Raspberry Vodka is one of the biggest selling flavors in the vodka set. So
it doesn't make it makes any too much sense. It's almost like a flow chart.
Yeah. And it's been driving me nuts that they won't come on, all these new flavors, which are all wonderful, but it's like, why don't you have a raspberry? It's like, but now the key here with the raspberry, and I don't know how they would make it and how it would taste, but I like the little bit lighter flavored High Noons. So like black cherry and cranberry are just, I don't mind them, but they're just a little too thick.
Overwhelming.
So,
yes.
Yeah. So I hope that if they did a raspberry, it would be a little bit lighter flavored raspberry.
I love the analysis here. This is great. Because one of my favorite drinks is cranberry vodka. So I was all excited and I'm like, I don't really like this one. It was too like punchy in the face cranberry. I'm like, because I'm more of like a splash of cranberry when I have my drink, so that wasn't working. But what I want, because my latest kick that I've been really going heavy on, just, you know, I'm watching my health and everything, I want to get the vitamin C. I'm going with, you know, orange juice and vodka is what I've been drinking a lot of, so I want an orange one. At the same time, I'm scared of being overwhelmed, like, you know, so many of these drinks taste like an orange high C or something, and that would kind of kill it. Like, we're not going Sunny D route, like don't go there. So, but I'd like to see an orange one. That would be intriguing for me. Maybe it's because, you know, cranberry came out so late, orange, raspberry, these like common sense ones, you think. So maybe these are taking forever. Given grapefruit is by far, like, still my favorite, I think. I love that one. But so many good ones. So many. Yeah. So many good ones. And you mentioned there's something else coming out, which I guess you keep a secret if you want. I've known about it for a while, but I'm curious what flavors they're going to mix those with. Very curious.
Going back to the orange, that's interesting because I wonder what kind of orange, like you're saying, like is it mandarin orange or
there's so many ways they can almost make a four pack of different orange ones.
Yeah,
and I'd be full game. I'd buy that tomorrow. So, you know, for those loyal High Noon listeners who I've actually contacted about sponsoring the show, they said no, but keep doing a great job. They answered me because they said we don't sponsor any podcasts right now. I said, well, when are you feeling up to it, let me know. Like, I don't need you to pay me. I just want some, like, a couple cases once in a while. That's all I need. Yeah, Orange would be fun. It'll be a lot of fun. I have one last question for you, and I was thinking about it throughout the pod and kept forgetting to ask. So with your early drafting, we talked about depth, we talked about draft strategy, all these things, and it's obviously going to change as ADPs change. But right now, where's kind of your KDS wheelhouse?
I want the front of the draft. I just think that when you look at those, so like however, I'm fine with any one of these guys, Trey Turner, Acuna, J-Rod, J-Ram, Kyle Tucker. Like those are, for me, those are like a clear top five. And it just opens up the draft so much for me. Like when you get that top pick, because if you look at the 2-3 turn, there's just tons of aces right there. So you could do like a modified pocket aces if you wanted with an elite five category bat. And, yep, you know, you're looking at Brandon Woodruff. Like, what did Brandon Woodruff do? I mean, you look at his numbers, they're insane. You don't
gotta sell me. My story with Woodruff is people would be drooling over Woodruff if Corbin Burns didn't exist.
Yeah, Woodruff was going at the end of the first round in main event drafts last year, and now he's going in the third round because he had an injury. But, like, he's fine now. So it's like, why is the discount almost two rounds on him? But you got like Dylan Cease and Spencer Strider, and if you want to take a shot on DeGrom, like even Sandy Alcantara is going down there. It's just, you can get a closer there. Like there's just so many other, it just opens up the draft so much when you have a five category bat. Now at the end of the first round, you can get elite hitters, right? So you got like Manny Machado, Freeman, Vlad, you know, Devers, Pete Alonso, Yordan, like tons of great hitters there, but not really a lot of speed. So you still need to kind of target speed at some point in those early rounds, like third, fourth round. And I mean, maybe Tatis is somebody that I'm not on right now. I just need to see him. I'm not even worried about the suspension. I don't even care about that. It's the shoulder, and he had just, you know, multiple surgeries. I haven't seen him. I haven't seen an update or anything. So I just can't take him right now. In March, if he's fine and playing spring training games, perfect. I'll no problem taking him then. But if you don't take him, then you're kind of behind the eight ball in speed. And I just don't want to be in that predicament. So I definitely like the front of much, much better than the back.
Yeah, it's kind of been my thing. Like my 250s, I've had the top pick in both. So I have J-Ram in both. But the Gladiators, I've been like 8 and 9 in both. If it's interesting. I'll say that much, but it's also a different draft. Obviously, you're going closers and whatnot. So it's definitely a different vibe, but I prefer the front. That's for sure. It sounds so simple, but there's been many years where the back end was totally fine, like all aboard the back end. So I was just curious to see what you were seeing here early on. All right, my friend, we'll wrap it up there. Before we head on out, plug your awesome podcast with Mr. Venancio one more time.
Yeah, it's the In the Cut Fantasy Sports Podcast. You can find it on, I think, all platforms, definitely at least iTunes and Spotify. So, but yeah, Bubba, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. And, you know, it's always fun to sit down and spend an hour or two talking some baseball with you.
Yep, always a pleasure. We'll do it probably one or two more times this offseason for sure. I always like hitting you up. You're usually always available, which is a plus. So I always enjoy chatting with you, one of the good ones out there. So everybody check out his podcast, In the Cut Fantasy, with Mr. Ryan Venancio and John Fish. He's on Twitter at Pile of Dial. This is Bench with Bubba, episode 525. Catch you guys next time.
one way to win up to 25 times your money this football season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of statistics, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and an enormous selection of players and stat options are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million football fans who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/get100 and use code GET100. That's code GET100 at prizepicks.com/get100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.